This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by USDish.com. Go to USDish.com/FilmSack and get a free $50 Visa gift card when you sign up for a new service. Get free HD channels for life, free Showtime for 3 months, including the new Borgia series. That's at USDish.com/FilmSack. And we thank US Dish for their support.
What the hell is that?
Humanoid. Organic composition is unclear.
Can someone tell me what's on his face?
Some kind of 20th century carbon filtration unit?
It's a hockey mask.
Very good, Cineron.
The statistical probability of survival is 12%. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Additional support for Film Sack comes from William Clements, Michael Brannan, Timothy Moscarino, and Roy Robinson. This episode is for you. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack episode 72. This is the show that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm joined this week by none other than Brian Nanobot Dunaway.
Hey, Scott, you don't really need a mass murder on board your spaceship of the future to realize an open sink full of liquid nitrogen is not a good idea. Of course, this is the same group of people who brought you a convenient cart of machete-shaped surgical tools. Whatever. Oh, I'm so lonely.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. You are just chipping away at all of the best parts of this film already. Also with us, Randy Screwkill Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian, and Brian. I am happy to inform you that in the year 2455, we will have accomplished the impossible. Space travel will be cheap. Robotics will have approached perfection. And we will have colonized a whole new Earth with our amazing technologies. Now, if only we could figure out how to super glue some fake nipples on the sex bot.
He seemed to struggle just a little bit with that.
Yeah, he seemed mad about it. Yeah. He's like, I don't even want these.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that in very particular. Yeah. Also, rounding us out today in Las Vegas, he's traveling. Mr. Brian Space Machete Ibbitt.
Space Machete.
Yeah.
You know, if you keep making that face, it'll freeze that way.
Perfect. Short, sweet, and to the point.
I love it. Nice job. In Vegas, but with the show, that's awesome that you can still do a show this weekend and we do not have to deprive the people of another episode. We're, of course, talking about Jason X. I hadn't seen it, so I was totally stoked for this one to be on our list. Missed it completely. This is the Jason in Space, Jason Voorhees in Space, but it's also our second Voorhees film. The last one we saw was Jason Goes to Hell, right?
Yeah.
Yep, that was the
one. It's our first Film Sack multiple franchise sacking.
Is it? Let me think. You're right. It is. There's no others like
that. We've done two Star Treks.
Oh, we did. Yeah,
you're right. Okay.
Yeah, no. You're right. Wrath of Khan and then all the way up to 5.
Oh, we did. That's right. Yes. I forgot about Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, but we all think, no one thinks of 5 as in the in the same series, right? I mean, not nearly as much anyway. But Jason X is the film, directed by James Isaac. We'll talk more about them and the cast in a minute. Let's let Scott Fletcher describe the film in more detail, shall we?
Jason X! It's 2455 AD, and Earth is a contaminated planet that's been abandoned for centuries. In the remains of a research facility, a visiting archaeology class discovers two frozen bodies, a beautiful woman, and a rotted corpse wearing a strange mask. When they transport the carcasses back to their space lab, never a good idea, and the ice melts, Jason is revived and ready to unleash a new kind of hell on the future.
So there you have it. Love it. Jason X, never more succinctly told than now by Scott Fletcher. Okay, so just real quick here, I found a piece of trivia about the writer that I had to share. You know how when you do like an IMDb, you're looking at a actor or a writer, director, doesn't matter, and it will have a big selection of what they're known for. In fact, the section is called Known For, and it will have four big pictures taken from four major things that they're known for. This writer is known for All My Children, Guiding Light, One Life to Live, and Freddy versus Jason.
That is awesome.
Isn't that great? That's Victor Miller, by the way, who came up with the characters. And
I see. So you're good. The guy who came up with the characters
did
that long before he caught on as a team writer for a bunch of
bad daytime.
What are those called?
Soap operas. Yeah. You mean that thing that's going away and two of them just got canceled?
So this is not a real credit. This is a credit. You made this up years and years ago, right? He didn't write the script for this film, is what you're saying.
He did not. He wrote the characters for this film when the film was being written and co-wrote. Who knows how much work they do together, but Todd Farmer is the dude what co-wrote the film. So he's probably more responsible for the story.
Which is about right, because this film is full of two-dimensional soap opera characters.
Todd Farmer is a 21st century horror film writer. He's responsible for the Messengers movies and Hellraiser and so forth.
Yeah, born in 1968, slightly younger than me. He wrote the...
We should do a Hellraiser.
They are doing a new one, brand new one.
No, I'm talking about we should do Hellraiser.
Oh, we should do, yeah. I should, you know what? I should just to face my fears, because I had a real problem with that thing when I was younger. Scared me to death. Yeah.
Now
yeah.
we have to note, we're not talking about the Hellraiser from the comic books.
That's no. We're talking Hellraiser movie based on Clive Barker novel.
Right.
Scary.
Pinhead.
Yeah. Little box thing. Yep. Cenobites. Whatever.
Yeah. I rather liked the first attempt at a Hellraiser comic adaptation. It was called Constantine.
Mm.
I thought that was a pretty good movie.
Oh, Constantine was all right as a film, but I didn't know it had anything to do with Hellraiser. Did it?
The comics. With Hellraiser the comics.
Oh, so Constantine's part of that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. There's a Keanu Reeves film we could watch and feel good about.
Oh, yeah. there's a Keanu Reeves film we could watch.
Right. Well, it's no Ortiz the dog, but come on. Todd Farmer, the guy that wrote this, is responsible for the recent Drive Angry film with Nicolas Cage paying the bills, and various other things like the revived 3D adaptation of My Bloody Valentine. So the guy writes a lot of horror movie stuff. Film came out in, 2001. So kind of... at first I went, that's not very old. And then I went, that's 10 years ago. That's plenty old. That freaks me out to even think about it. But so I won't. It stars a bunch of people you don't know. With one exception, I think. Peter Mensah. He is dude what got kicked into the well in 300.
All right, let's stop right here. These are people you don't know if you didn't watch Andromeda.
Oh, right. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a real good point.
There are a bunch of Andromeda alumni, minus Hercules. He's not in it. I wish he was. But yeah, you're right. There's a whole bunch of crossover there. In fact, two of the characters, the female characters in this movie, switch places, basically. In this movie, one's a robot, one's a crew member. In that show, the other one was a robot and the other one was a crew member.
Well, she was the ship.
Yeah. With the ship, a robot ship, whatever. It's pretty close. But the guy I like the most in all this is Peter Mensah. He most recently can be seen in that Spartacus show that's kind of lame but kind of great at the same time.
Just if you're thinking who are they talking about? He looks like Tyrese.
Yeah, giant, like, scary black man.
Right. He looks like Seal without the skin damage.
Totally looks like Seal without the scarring. You're right about that.
He kind of does, yeah.
Yeah. What's that song?
Michael, Michael Abaddon, Kiss from Rose.
Yeah, that's the one. Sorry. Anyway, who?
And Michael,
I think it's Michael Abaddon. He was in Lost. He was the black guy that helps Locke.
Yeah. Ended up in the other one that's real popular now, Fringe. He's in Fringe.
Yes, Fringe. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that guy. He does look a lot like him. I think this guy could kill them all, though.
I think so. Yes, he's
a beast.
He's bad.
Big beast.
He's the badass version of all of those.
But he'll always. I mean, he'll die. He'll die one day being the dude that got kicked into the well what's his name during the most iconic line of that
Gerard
film.
Gerard Butler in 300. Yes, yeah. Gerard Butler kicks him into the well. This is madness, and down he goes.
Yeah. Poor guy. But it, I mean, that's an amazing, you know, piece of cinema history where you're always the douche that went in the well. There's just no getting around it. You went in.
But he was probably the best part of this movie, though. I mean, this guy
definitely.
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. I liked him a lot.
Well, actually, I'm going to say him and Jason himself. Jason was amazing in this film.
Yeah.
I agree, but it's stupid. Can we just get to brass tacks? It's Jason in space, you guys. I don't know if you saw, but that's ridiculous.
I don't know if you watched it or not.
It's
only
so if you actually watched stupid. The whole thing. Like I now that being said, I had a blast with this movie.
Yeah.
And my wife sat and watched me, and she can confirm. I laughed at almost everything. I was having a ball, and I had more fun with this than I did with Jason Goes to Hell, and maybe more than any pseudo slasher film I've seen in a very long time. I really had a good time with it. My biggest complaint about this is that it doesn't follow genre rules, which is you start with some of the deaths early on aren't all that, you know, major, and they should get progressively crazier, weirder, and more bloody as you go on. And the best death in the movie happens the first time, and it's the girl with the face in the sink. Everything else after that was a little bit rote, a little bit kind of by the numbers. It's like, oh, I opened a door and a machete went through my chest and I'm dead now. That kind of stuff got a little old for me, and I really wish they would have gotten more creative with the deaths as time went on. And the guy falling down on the screw maybe was kind of, sort of, but
that was awesome.
Yeah.
The battle between the sex bot and Jason, I'm sorry, there were several actually, but the final battle between the sex bot and Jason was incredible.
Pretty awesome.
And I'm so glad that was late in the film because I was still being entertained.
Yeah, that was a good time. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. So look at these names, like Lexi Dong. Or Doing.
Doing.
It's Doing. Doing.
Doing.
Doing. Lisa Ryder, Chuck Campbell, Jonathan Potts. I mean, that name alone just requires us to make fun of him.
Okay, so Lexa Doig is a Canadian, and she was the ship in Andromeda.
She's lovely,
and,
by the way.
And she's essentially the lead in this film. She's the non-Jason person.
No, I'm
going to
come right out and say she's the Sigourney Weaver of this story. Can we just be straight up about it? All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lexa. That's a good name, too.
That's a cool name. Lexa Doig. Sounds like someone bounced a ball off of her as she tried to say her last name. Lisa Ryder played KM14. She was the robot. She was the bishop. I'm just going to use all the aliens analogs. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right with that.
Yeah. And she looks exactly like Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Jonathan.
You know what?
What? Go ahead.
You know what's weird? You know what's weird about this movie is when I was watching this as a Jason movie, I kept going, "Oh, this is kind of crappy for a Jason movie." But then about halfway through, I went, "You know what? This is a pretty good sci-fi movie."
Yeah,
it's not too bad.
It isn't. It isn't terrible in that way. It does feel like fanfic a little bit. Like this doesn't seem like it should be in the canon at all.
You know.
So what's that say about my expectations of sci-fi? Though, I mean,
you know what, Scott? Whenever a series goes on, you reach a point where it's only going to have another movie when some fan has gone to a studio with a script he wrote, and that's exactly what precipitated this, and said, "I want you to do this," and they bought it. Like, this is fan fiction. It's not like it. It is.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. It feels alternate reality. Yes, sorry, but go ahead.
No, that's all right. There's definitely something to that, you know, as far as this being a good sci-fi movie, maybe not a great Jason movie. I've only seen the first Friday the 13th and then the two that we've watched for Film Sec,
good enough.
whichever one the previous one was that precipitated, or that was before
Jason Goes to Hell.
Yeah. No, we didn't see Jason Goes to Hell. We saw the one before that.
Right, because at the end he went to hell.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Jason prepares to go to hell. And
Jason preps for hell.
What was it called? Now that's going to bug the crap out of me. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Jason. And then this one. And of the three of them, this one, I actually enjoyed this one the most. And it's probably because I haven't seen all the Jason movies and said, okay, there's some really good things in two, there's a couple of good things in three, blah, blah, blah. This one, I think, works on a level. It's a bad movie.
Of course.
Not a great movie. But as far as what it was trying to do, I think it did really well. And I enjoyed it.
But at this stage of the movies or the folks behind this franchise or whoever owns the rights to it, they've pretty much given up on the idea that he is a serial killer anymore, right? Like he's just some kind of superhuman.
He was not really a serial killer. He's just a killing machine, basically.
Exactly. He's a. I don't want to say that word because Lady Gaga just got in trouble for saying this word. He's a retarded killer, is what he is. I mean, I'm not trying. Mentally handicapped.
Well, but no, I don't. I disagree. He's not necessarily retarded. He's more like the Grim Reaper stuck in a human body. Like he's, you know what I'm saying? Like he just is the agent of death, agent of death.
Yes.
Actually, if you want to be down to brass tacks, he's a cautionary tale of having premarital sex. I mean, that's what the whole thing is about. His mom kills people who are having sex, and you'll even notice during this one, he comes back to life as soon as the girl that is getting boned in the porno movie this thing turned into, when she moans, that's when he comes back to life.
Yeah, no, that's true. I've kind of forgotten about that. And then the references in the holodeck scene where the girls on the beach or whatever, by the camp thing, and they were doing the same thing. Yeah. We love that. That's what we love.
More premarital sex.
Yeah.
When he beat the one girl in the bag with the other girl in the bag,
dude,
how could you not say that the deaths got better all the way through the movie?
Yeah, that was rip roaring hysterical.
All right, I'll give you that.
I was falling out of my chair at that scene.
I'll give you that. That was pretty good. I just wanted him to be more. I like him to be just, you know, this next one is just sicker than the last one, and that, we didn't get a lot of that. It was mostly just sort of. Let's pretend this is Aliens. In this case, it's Jason Voorhees, and we have lower budget, and our CGI sucks. Let's have that movie. Right.
But it is true that there's no other mention of any of the other Freddy lore stuff like we saw in whichever movie it was we saw before, where they talked about he can only be killed by a Voorhees and this and that.
That was none of that.
No, that wasn't.
Wasn't Jason Goes to Hell.
No, it was called Jason
because he goes to hell at the very end.
Yes, it was. That's exactly
That's how Freddy took him. Freddy brought him down to hell. That's how it happened.
So wait, that's the one with the black dude that kept saying the guy that ran 21 Jump Street kept saying whatever he said. You haven't had a taste of the Duke yet. That guy,
Jason goes to hell. The final Freddy. That is exactly correct.
All
okay.
Right.
As I recall,
there was a Team Gibbet thing going on there where we didn't like that movie very much, and I do not blame you for forgetting the name because it wasn't very good.
Which one does he turn into a little boy at the end of it?
Oh no, he didn't actually turn into a boy. That was Corey Feldman, and
I'm asking Brian Dunaway because he's the only one who could answer this question.
Wait, Jason turns into a little boy in one of them?
Yes, at the very end of one of them, and I think
it was a new beginning. Friday 13th. It was part 5, I believe. It was a new beginning where Corey Feldman.
We're talking about something completely different.
No, wait, are you talking about the one where at the end he comes out of the water and pulls the girl out of the boat?
No,
that's the first one.
That's the first one where he's not actually in the film.
There's Jason Lives, which is part 6, is in the area.
No.
Are you thinking of the new one where he's
New Blood? The New Blood.
That's the one where was that the one? No, 5 was the 5-1 was the one with the psych. Yeah, you're right. It's the New Blood. I think you're right.
No. It's the one with Jason Brad Pitt.
Jason Picks Manhattan.
It's the one with Brad Pitt, where he's old at
just
first.
Messing around.
He's young later.
One of them ends with Jason being washed in this sewer of toxic waste.
Yeah.
And the last thing you see is him as he has been taken.
Yeah, that's Jason. That's Jason, the Toxic Avenger.
No, it's Jason Takes Manhattan, isn't it?
Is it? Okay. I think you're right. It's Jason Takes Manhattan, which I think is like the 7th or 8th one.
They should have filmed the Muppet movie and the Jason movie at the same time.
The reason I bring it up is because Jason films Live and Die on the last scene. How'd you get to the end and what's happening there? We're already talking about Freddy pulling him down to hell. And we're going to get to the last scene in this film, but my gosh, it couldn't be worse than him being turned into a little boy by toxic waste. There's no way you could ever have a worse ending.
Except when he's flying through the atmosphere and burns up on entry and then lands in the ocean.
He gets ridden like a...
And then, by the way, burns up on reentry, but then his mask lands in the equivalent lake on the equivalent Earth, because there is no Earth 1 anymore. Right. Yeah. Give me a break.
I love that.
And I hated it.
And there's a couple, and it ends with them going, yeah. Oh, something fell in the lake. Let's go check it out.
And actually,
as if somebody's going to continue and make a movie from that piece of crap.
They did. It was called The Mask. Yeah, it was called The Mask.
Jim Carrey found The Mask. That's not the
That scene looks just like the opening scene for The Mask.
It does. It's weird.
That's really funny.
I love it. That, okay, so since we're talking about the last scene, we were not going to save it. I love it that you know, they're riding down in space and Seal is on Jason and they're burning up and everything. And they cut to this couple by a lake. Like, how many times in a Jason film are we going to see a couple making out by a lake? It's I'm almost bored of it. And they stand up and she's got huge breasts under, you know, like they're clothed. But you're just like, what the hell? how many more times can we go to this? Not just in the series, but in this film even.
Yeah. I like in the 2455 or whatever the hell date it was.
Yeah,
people
right.
are still sitting in front of a lake in the same clothes they wore in 2001.
I know.
That's brilliant. Well,
apparently, speaking of clothing, apparently knitting is very big in the future because everybody was wearing these knit clothes and fuzzy clothes. It was weird.
Yeah, that one girl barely. Oh,
yeah, the girl with the open front chest thing that just
she
I recognize her from something else and I couldn't figure out what it is and I can't these names in these stupid movies or this is like. Well, let me go back to the names here. It's
okay,
like
all right, so
Maxi and Vancy and Trixie and Janessa and Kinsa. Okay, there
you're talking white. And
you have to be talking about this actress named Christy Angus. You have to.
I don't know.
No, I liked her a lot. The blonde that dies first with her face. And why kill her off so quickly? She was.
I don't know. They never got to see anything from her. I was kind of disappointed.
I was too.
Well, with a last name like Angus.
I know it's a great.
It was the one that had the open front, like she just had these three bars going across her
chest.
It's the one that had the panic attack and destroyed the ship. Practically.
Yeah.
She was either Janessa or Kinson. I don't recognize anything else that I might have seen her in. Well,
Angus looked really familiar to me.
She's been in some stuff.
Yeah.
It's not a good sign when about half the cast doesn't even have a picture on Internet Movie Database.
Well, they're all Canadian, so they don't get that part of the internet.
That's kind of funny. That's true. Most of these people are not on there. Weird. Ooh, that's really weird. Like almost all of them. Well, this one guy does. Anyway.
I don't understand that thing with Canadian actors and actresses, how they only, you know, they seem to only work on that side of the border and they don't get portrayed.
Well, Ibbot, here's the answer to your question about why they're named so weird. According to the trivia, several of the characters in the film are named after screenwriter Todd Farmer's online friends in his PC game, his guild, EverQuest 99.
No way.
Yep. He was a big EverQuest fan. So he put a bunch of his buddies in his guild in the thing. How stupid is that?
Oh, stupid nothing. That is the best trip ever.
That's stupid.
They always say, write what you know.
The virtual 80s scene was originally meant to have much more detailed stuff going on, including a number of topless women playing volleyball. One idea even included the appearance of Pamela Voorhees, Jason's mother, and even went so far as to have Jason attack her, showing the extent of just how evil he had become. The latter idea was dropped, partially because the woman would have nothing to do with the film. Here's the most shocking piece of trivia that I could find. Jason murders 28 people in this film, more than any other Friday the 13th movie ever.
More than that. I thought about that too. There's more than that because he actually killed everybody on that space station.
Yeah.
When they went careening into it, because that's exactly what I was thinking. His body count just shot through the roof.
Solaris.
Yeah. When he busted Solaris, baby. Yeah,
poor, what's his name? I can't think of his name now. Never mind.
If you look close, you can see out of the bottom.
George Clooney.
Poor George Clooney got blown out of Solaris that day. That was the joke I was going for, and it took me an hour.
So I figured out the answer to your question, Brian. What I did was I took the names of the different actresses that don't have pictures on IMDb, and I Google image searched them until I found one where one of the results is a picture from the film with that wide open knit shirt. And it is Melissa Ade. And so the character was Janessa. And I really, man, this is somebody who really has been in a ton of stuff that you've never seen. It's really weird.
She's known for Jason X, Interstate 60, and Visitors of the Night. And then and then something called Fatal Desire that doesn't have a photo.
Yeah. she's a working actress.
Yeah.
It looks like there's actually, it's funny, if you Google image search, and I'm not kidding, Google image search Melissa Aide, about four rows down, five rows down, there's a picture of Seal.
Oh, you're lying to me. Oh my gosh, you're right.
That is so funny.
There's also a picture of Martin Short, so that isn't, I don't know what's going on there. But
right.
Weird. Okay. Weird. Yeah, she's familiar. She's instantly familiar to me, but I don't know what else I've seen her in, so.
Yeah.
Weird. Anyway.
All right.
So there's we've solved the mystery of the open-shirted lady. One more piece of trivia. In Andromeda, I already mentioned this, Lexi Doing played the avatar of the ship's artificial intelligence, and Lisa Ryder played a crew member. In this movie, they were swapped, and she played Bishop in this one. Mm-hmm. Also, I loved the Hell intro. I thought that was great. Now, was this after the Hell one then? Or was Freddy versus Jason between these two, or did it happen? I think that was the trivia when we watched Hell, because the deal was that it was supposed to be Freddy versus Jason after that, but they paused for this first.
Well, they didn't pause for this, but Freddy versus Jason, it was having so much trouble it couldn't be produced, and that's the reason why this one was set in the future, because they didn't want to screw with the timeline.
Exactly.
Versus Jason.
Okay.
Exactly, but. That really, what that whole intro, which was amazing, the opening credits were awesome.
They were.
That, just because you think you saw Hell, that it may not be correct. Like, the whole thing was about his body, like his what's going on in his brain, his eye, and his blood being drawn, and what it looks like if you were to go in his blood, like to shrink way down. It may not have actually been Hell they were
trying
to
portray. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
that's what
I didn't connect it as Hell at all. Yeah.
Didn't I thought it was Hell. I thought they were in his brain and in his thoughts, and that was basically just torment and Hell, and then they kind of went through his body and stuff. That's what I was picking up.
But, yeah, I picked up a Hell vibe.
Reminded me a little bit of the first X-Men film with all the DNA strands that you're traveling through on.
Yeah, yeah. They eventually get to that too.
Yeah, but it seemed like at first there were like a bunch of people screaming and there were flames and lava and stuff. I don't know. Maybe I wanted it to be Hell. I don't know.
No, that's what I picked up, too. So I would say.
I didn't see that at all. Okay.
Weird.
I might have to watch this thing again. I would watch it again. I mean, that's kind of getting to the end of the show here, but I would watch this movie again. I enjoyed it that much.
Yeah, I'd watch it with friends and just laugh and have a good time. Mm-hmm. It was a big, dumb, stupid mess. It was just fun. Like, I did not hate this movie. I thought it was fine for what it was meant to be. Although there are a couple of things that really ruin it for me. I'll get to those later. But there's some stuff. So I wanted to do our first trope of the day, which starts with this. And that is, the pilot is always a dick in a hat.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Yes. You just and can't be a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
That never happens, Han Solo. I'm just saying, there's never a dicky kind of guy who is the pilot.
Always a dick in a pilot. It's always a dick. He always has a dumb hairdo or a bad, stupid hat or weird glasses or something. He's always a smart ass.
Remember, between Obi-Wan and Anakin, which one was the great flyer and which one hated to fly?
That's right. That's right. Hey,
Vader.
In the same trope area, what's up with the engineer? I mean, he's like a biker dude.
We'll give him a ding dong diddly.
Ding dong diddly.
And also, did he just show up when he was working on his plants or whatever he was doing in there?
Yeah, he had like little cactuses and stuff. He had a really weird work.
But
area.
But he wasn't anywhere before that. Like that was his introductory scene. Or did I not remember seeing?
No, they showed him right away at the very beginning when they were calling up and saying they were going to need some stuff.
Yeah.
When they were kind of. They were kind of shooting through the different cast of characters, and he was facing us to the back.
Oh, it was kind of that collage-y kind of intro where everyone's like, we're pulling out to the, we're flying to, we're lifting off in 20 minutes. Okay, tell Bill to, and have what's-her-name come over and pinch my nipples, and okay. See ya.
There's a lot of unnecessary sex.
Yes, there was.
Yes, there is.
But isn't, well, I mean, that's the trope of these movies.
I don't know if we call it unnecessary.
It's always to be unnecessary.
But yeah, but it's so, it felt a little forced for this film. It's like, all right, we know it's a Jason movie, so you got to have that in there. But let's have, and again, so now it's teenagers doing it in space. It's
unnecessary to the plot doesn't necessarily mean unnecessary to keep my attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like that scene where the Paul Reiser character was wearing a dress and getting his salad tong nipples going. Louise. Yeah, it was pretty hot. Hubba, hubba.
There was a lot of sex with clothes on in this film.
Mm. Yeah, there was. Yeah.
A lot of implied sex. Mm.
Yeah. Right.
Not the good kind.
I got a trope for you.
Oh, hold on. Go.
greedy scientists always want to keep alive the thing that should be killed.
Yep. Always, right?
And if the greedy scientists didn't do anything, then the movie would have ended with, okay, let's freeze them. We're done. Bing.
Movie complete. But the thing is that a specific, is that an aliens thing and no one else has really done that much? Or am I, is there more of that? And I just never.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Did they do that with the guy transporting, wanted to bring some of the live animals to.
Yeah, they're always trying to do that. Yeah, King Kong. I mean, this is a classic.
So King Kong is, oh, that's a good example, yeah. So never mind. King Kong is the one that probably started it or something like that. And they're probably like, I don't know, old 50s schlocky black and white horror movies that are kind of along that vein.
Well, I mean, the whole point of a horror movie is to have everybody in the audience go, no, dummy, don't do it, no!
Yeah. And then have them still do it, yep.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay, let me have a trope then. You make no sense. Jason is highly valued because he can regenerate, right?
Mm,
yes. They already have nanotechnology to do that now. He's not valuable at all.
Crap.
That's right.
I was getting pissed off in the movie because every time somebody get chopped, I'm like, dude, he only hacked him in one spot. Get him back. You can, you know, put him back in.
Yeah.
Put him back in the thing and they'll regenerate them.
I hate total illogic. Like, I can stand a little mind bending, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, this thing fixes everybody and brings them all back to life, fixes a dude's arm got cut off. And at first, I thought when he got cut off, I'm like, oh man, they sure are acting nonchalant about this.
Dude. It wasn't dude, it was Sean White.
Sean White. Skateboarder Sean White, yeah.
It's so awesome. He's walking along. Oh crap! I forgot my arm. This was one of the funniest horror movies I've ever seen.
It had moments. I'll admit there were moments where they tried to be funny where it fell really flat. But there were also times where I kind of was like, oh, that's actually pretty clever, that little moment right there.
Yeah.
But they I don't know, it's kind of inconsistent that way. But it was all right. But what wasn't all right was bad CGI. Man, I'm telling you. Some of the worst CGI I'd seen in 2001.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Those ships. You may as well have gone back and said, all right, Last Starfighter, where are the people who made that? Let's put those back in. Those ships look terrible.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that.
Mm-hmm. You think it was all right? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You like the
I've seen worse crap on sci-fi today.
Well, okay.
I mean, oh, that's true.
That's true. Well, but
that's not a bar you should be a measuring stick you should be comparing anything to.
But that nano gravy or whatever the hell it's supposed to be was like running all over everybody. That all just looked bad.
The ants, right?
Like Star Trek.
Different than the ants, or was that
that was the ants.
The ants. You just see them from a distance. It looked like gravy.
To me, it felt like the whole thing was kind of on par with TNG season one, kind of. Like, just bad, kind of crappy, sort of half A. The monsters they were fighting in the virtual hoo-ha looked really dumb.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad, but
just dumb. I did like the headless effects. Those are always fun for me. I always enjoy, like, when she's still talking. She's just robot head laying there.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that. Or when the camera would be positioned just right to make it look like he's carrying her head around independently.
Yes.
Really,
he's giving her like a
full headlock. Nelson, dude.
A little buggy.
Because her whole neck was like pulled up. Yeah. Like, choking me.
This reminds me of the trope that I thought about the most during this film. Give me a sound. My goodness, this film is filled with hottie scientists.
Oh yeah.
And that's and that's something that I kind of enjoy, but it's the only hottie scientist film I've ever seen where there wasn't a single semi-ugly person in the whole film. Not one. No balance at all.
Not with the
Everyone's
women.
Don't that to the Daphne.
Yeah. The women, you're right. The men, they varied, but the women all looked like hot co-eds, and they were supposed to be students, so that kind of made like sort of sense. Yeah. The part that didn't make sense to me that kind of broke things early for me was, all right, so Voorhees is being taken to this high security structure to be put on ice forever because that's the only way they can kill him. Why they never put him through a meat grinder, I'll never understand. They're like, oh, yeah, we tried to hang him. That didn't work. We tried shooting him. That didn't work. We tried electrocuting him. Boy, that didn't work either. Well, then put him through something where there's just tiny pieces left. And that's all.
Yeah, you know what happened?
Get a hamburger from that meat. They'd end up his soul in him. They'd end up being the new Jason.
Exactly. I'm going to say they already did that, and Jason goes to hell. Exactly.
He did. I forgot they blew him up in that. That's true. All right. So fair enough. And I don't want another one of those movies made. So yes, fine. But when they're in there doing that whole thing, and then he gets loose, because they never explained that, but somehow that guy threw a blanket over it. Voorhees.
Well, I love that. That's what I love about that kind of stuff. We don't need to know.
Yeah. In fact, he said, I think his words were this right here. He says this.
Why don't you stare at this for a little while, you ugly bastard?
Oh, sorry. So then he threw that blanket over him like my dad.
It must have been one of those hot towers you get on the plane sometimes. It was
like my dad trying to censor whatever was on TV is what it reminded me of. Threw the blanket over there, and then that was it. He got out and started killing everybody except her. All right, fine. She doesn't escape. She gets frozen in the room with him. Jump 400 years into the future.
Which, by the way, killed me. I'm like, really? A small puncture wound is going to end up freezing cryogenically the entire chamber.
Well, yeah, see, that's crap, too. But why did no one ever go back to see? Like, exactly. Somehow the place is a tomb that no one's ever been in again for 400 years?
That's the trope I've seen in other movies. Yeah. It's all of a sudden something tragic happens in a location and no one ever touches it. It happens a lot in sci-fi movies. Yeah. And it just goes on and on. I'm like, no, that would have been like, what the hell happened to Jason Voorhees?
I actually didn't trip on that because my understanding was that in the middle of flooding the chamber, if the outer chamber becomes compromised, the system seals it and floods the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
That was my understanding of it.
I was okay with that. I just had a problem with it. Oh, she never got home. Nobody ever made it home. Yeah. So all the people that didn't make it home or to their jobs or to their anything, nobody thought to go check the place they work.
Whatever.
Right.
Right. Oh, she's missing.
She's an orphan.
Maybe those events literally happened the afternoon before Armageddon. Like whatever it was. Yeah. That took the Earth out.
Skynet, same day.
Everyone dust your hands off. We're done here. And now there's a whole new Earth to be on. And no one remembers 400-year-old what's-her-name. That's bad. That's the first thing I thought of. But anyway, I guess it's a Jason movie. What am I talking about?
Now I'm looking through the cast list or the cast and credits here because normally I turn off the movie as soon as it's done, as soon as the credits are rolling. But I don't know what made me kind of keep watching the end credits. Maybe I was listening to music or something. Yeah. And there was a credit near the end called Fact Checker. Mm, yeah. And I wanted to write down this guy's name because it was like this guy had probably the easiest job and didn't do it.
No, he's got a really difficult job because he has to try at least to make the thing square with all the previous films.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Like
right,
that's a tough like continuity. Imagine being the continuity writer on a soap opera. Holy cow.
No, it's like being the continuity writer on something like Mortal Kombat or something where it's where it's so completely janked.
Yeah.
And by the way, these movies to me are like Mortal Kombat games where each fatality is more shocking than the last. Mm-hmm. And then this movie felt a little bit like DC versus MK where they watered it all down. That's all I meant about earlier when I was saying they just didn't seem brutal enough.
Yeah.
Just not harsh enough. Like when the girl got sucked through the tube or through the hole in the wall.
Oh, dude.
Right.
That made no sense at all. You can't.
A human skeleton.
Right.
She would have plugged it up nicely.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. She would have plugged it up at worst and then might get a hole sucked through her middle or something.
But like in Alien 4, for example, that was a really good example of how you do a breach in the hull, have something get stuck on it and get sucked out and make it be really gross. Maybe not realistic, but really gross. This wasn't gross at all. It was like, oh, this sucks on so many levels. And then gets sucked up into the hole. Everyone turns their head, looks back, and there's a little bit of hamburger hanging on the edge of it.
Yeah.
You know, Brian, I think the physics would have even been in her favor if she'd just laid on the hole because inside a pressurized container, the pressure on the inside of the hull is the same as the pressure on you. As you're walking around. So I really don't think anything about that is realistic.
No. They were acting like it was passenger 57 or something. someone flung the door open, at 30,000 feet or whatever.
Yes.
One more trope here. Where is it? Right here. It's the alien's blueprint with the dude who's trying to make money and the crew trying to survive. And eventually the guy who tries to make money dies. It's all like Ibbot's trope. But my point is, this is lifted from Aliens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, arguably Alien 2. Right. The first Alien movie is kind of the same thing, but Aliens really, with the Paul Reiser character, this is the same exact blueprint. It's almost like they went, well, okay, we got to have a writer's credit, but all he really has to do is reassign names and name people after dudes he plays EverQuest with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're done.
I don't think anybody was too concerned about, them stealing a story idea.
Well, they lifted it, dude.
Yeah.
Completely lifted it.
I agree.
I also thing, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was I just going to what? Go.
Go ahead. No, you. Go ahead.
The thing that
Brian Ibbett. Go ahead. Ibbett. Go ahead.
I'll go ahead. No, you go. No, Brian Dunaway, you go first.
Back to you, Randy. What do you got?
The thing that stuck with me, I don't even want a trope alert because it's just so disgusting, is the whole idea where you've been fighting this guy who doesn't die. You do everything you can to kill him. He keeps regenerating. He keeps coming back. You finally put so many bullets in him that he stops moving. And that's when you walk away and leave him on the table with the nanobots.
Mm.
No problem. We're done here.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. It's not even a trope. It's just stupid.
Yeah, that was just stupid. I'll give that a slurp my butt.
Slurp my butt.
There we go.
How many films have you seen that where they're like, okay, he's dead enough.
Yeah. Mm. On the subject of death, can we just real quick round the table? Favorite death?
Face and the stuff for me. The
frozen face. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
Mine is Seal when he gets stabbed and says, it's going to take a lot more than that to kill me. And then a second machete comes through and he says, yep, that'll do it.
I love that. Randy, what you got?
It actually wasn't a death, but I love it when two of the crew members, one of them being the Flying Tomato, are playing a VR game and Jason comes walking in and slices Flying Tomato in half. I don't know why. Because I wanted that. I realized it the instant it happened, it wasn't a real death. But holy cow, it was so awesome.
Oh, it was great.
Peel and into pieces.
And he just goes, ah, or something like that.
What the Eggman?
Talk about worst, crummiest use of virtual reality technology. So you don't actually walk around through a holodeck type thing. You sit on the floor with a game controller.
Well, it's no wonder all the they called them grunts, but all the army dudes were a bunch of pansies, except for tall guy who went in the well in 300. Everybody else, yeah, except for Seal, everybody else was like this wimpy, flimsy. And once again, we have a movie, and I could trope. Oh, you know what? This is a trope. We have a film where 98-pound models save the day.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
And I actually like that.
I hate that.
You don't like that?
Everyone does it. It's ridiculous.
That's the reason why I like the Resident Evil movies so much. I know you probably hate them, but
it totally subverted the whole thing about if you're the one having the most sex, you're the one getting the most killed, because like the kid with the robot, you know, with his sex bot, they both survive,
and
he must have had sex with her in some form or fashion 5 times in this film.
Never. So.
Yes, and then he keeps choking on her nipples.
Oh yeah.
I even want nipples.
That was pretty good. I like that. I noticed an old original IMAX screen on the ship.
Really?
At one point. Yeah, you have to watch for it, but it's the little logo even, everything. Little Apple logo behind the gray screen thing. It's one of those old, see-through colored stupid IMAX. That was kind of weird. All right.
Huh.
Let's play some clips. We have some to play. And they go like this. This is them taking him into the facility. See if you can tell who this guest star is. This is very early in the film. Before we jump in time, this is supposed to be 2010 when this is happening. And see if you can guess who this guest star in this scene is.
I'm moving him to our Scranton facility.
Dr. Wimmer, you can't risk transporting him through open country.
This isn't open for discussion. His unique ability to regenerate lost and damaged tissue, and it cries out for more research.
And you're willing to risk the deaths of innocent civilians if he escapes?
Yes. But I'm sure Sergeant Marcus and his men can handle the transfer just fine. Sergeant?
Everything's under control, man.
Yeah, for the next 5 minutes. David Cronenberg, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Is that his voice? Really?
Yep.
Did you catch the next line?
No.
Oh.
What'd he say?
He wants some cold and, he wants some soft and not hard and cold or something.
Oh, that was earlier. That was earlier.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, I almost capped it, but yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
David Cronenberg, who I guess this director is a fan of or thinks he's his hero or mentor, came and did a little guest star role on here. So, and he took a big old spear to the gut, through the back. Remember that?
And then and instead of saying run, he said, get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't him, though. It was somebody else.
Oh, that wasn't him.
Who was that? That was the Army guy.
Yeah, that was outside the door. You're right.
That was the Army guy who thought he had it all under control, but did not.
And that first scene was an homage to all of the horror film, ways of moving around the bad guy. Like, oh, they had him, they had him disappear. They had him switch himself out with someone else, and they pulled a veil away. And then, you think he's over here, but he's actually standing right behind you. Like, it was beautiful, that first scene.
Yeah. I actually think that's what I was going to say. I think that mini movie at the beginning was once again better than the rest of it. Because after that, everybody was just really stupid. It seemed like everybody was really intelligent in 2010. And then once you get into the future, it's like a bunch of Yahoo crazy teenage crazy kids.
Mm-hmm. It's because all they do is have sex.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all they do.
It's Porky's in space with a slash.
Yeah. I still think the blonde should have been the heroine that survived.
I do too.
Yeah.
She was nice to look at.
Instead, she had a face full of whatever that was.
Face full of freeze.
She was Mrs. Freeze. All right.
She had a face full of freeze, baby.
And the way it looked when she got her head dunked and the camera was in the water and it showed it like freezing up, that was awesome.
It was good.
And they just didn't do any more of that. I wish they'd done more of it.
How come we went around the table and talked about favorite deaths? Nobody brought up the guy landing on the giant screw.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah. You never asked me mine. That was actually mine.
Was that yours, really?
Yeah. I love that he just slowly rotates down that screw.
That was so cool. They stuck it with it. I mean, it was like...
And it was also noted that and many, many of the deaths, hardly any of them were practical effects. Most were CGI this time around, which was weird. Mm-hmm. And also the first Friday the 13th did not initially get... something worse than R rating, and they didn't have to hardly cut anything. So that's interesting, because the one that Randy saw, remember that with Jason Goes to Hell, he saw a way more hardcore version than we did.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I remember.
Right.
Yeah, and you were telling us things about scenes where I couldn't believe it, like splitting somebody straight up the middle while they're buck naked in a tent.
Well, and it's almost a de rigueur method of making a film nowadays. You shoot a bunch of stuff that you don't intend to show the MPAA, and then you release that, you know, unrated version afterwards. In fact, it's actually kind of cliche now, right?
Or you do it like the South Park dudes claim in that MPAA movie that kind of I forgot what it's called.
Yeah.
This movie's
Team America.
Unrated. Yeah, Team America. They put all this extra stuff in, not because they wanted it in the film, but because they wanted to get them to a center point that was closer to where they wanted it,
right?
Rather than start with what they wanted and then peel back from there. So what they ended up getting in was way more than they think they could have if they just had presented it.
Yeah. And on the Team America special edition DVD or whatever it is, there's the uncut version of the dolls having sex scene.
Oh yeah, right.
And it's unbelievable. I can't believe they could bring themselves to show that to the MPAA. Like, it's really it goes.
Yeah, well, that's the part I'm thinking of is I think that's the part they were saying they would have them like pooing on each other and
yeah, exactly.
All this kind of stuff that they never intended to keep. Like, they didn't really want it in there, but they did it to make sure they got what they wanted, which I think is awesome. But anyway.
By the way, Brian Ibbett just reminded me that earlier in the show, I was misunderstanding something. I was calling Hellraiser the same thing as Hellblazer. Those are completely different films.
Yeah. And works.
That makes
sense. Okay, now it makes sense. I thought Clive Barker had something to do with that Keanu Reeves story. I had no idea. I was kind of excited about it. Now I'm...
I know it. Oh, well.
Now I'm downtrodden. tell me what's on his face, asks the stupid professor when they find him in the frozen thing. This is one of my favorite moments in the film.
What the hell is that?
Humanoid. Organic composition is unclear.
Can someone tell me what's on his face?
Some kind of 20th century carbon filtration unit?
It's a hockey mask.
Very good, Senorita.
What's a hockey mask?
Facial armor. Used in a sport outlawed in 2024.
Oh, I see what you did.
It's one of those sports that was replaced by future sport.
Yeah. You ever notice that? I feel like that's a trope. You always hear that in future movies. You always go, oh, this violent sport was outlawed and whatever.
Yep.
Yes.
Future
I think the bigger trope there is the idea that these people speak the precise same language 450 years later, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And toilet paper. No, use the three shells.
And they have the same exact value system or lack of values. They have the same everything. It's like, all we want to do is do it and make jokes and flip our thumb at authority. And everyone's still greedy. And maybe that's all it never leaves. Maybe that's just human nature. But man, so many leaps in technology. You'd think, since we can regenerate, you know, Carrot Top's arm at a moment's notice.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, regenerate the life of anybody 450 years old from anywhere on Earth. They're from the 17th century now. And tell me you could speak to them easily.
Good point. That's a really good way of looking at that, yeah. You know, but English won. America, the winners. No accent change, nothing. Everyone sounds the same.
All right. And if you're listening to this in the future, you'll probably not understand a thing we're saying.
I now present you with a longer clip, a weird conversation with an old dude in his bed. Here it is.
Two 400-year-old frozen specimens. One well-preserved. The other one, are you ready for this? Up and walking around.
400 years old and walking around.
Yeah. 455 years, to be exact.
Who cares? Who gives a shit?
People. People will pay huge money to see her.
Let me ask you a question. Is this the first person you've reanimated?
Of course not.
How many people are out there today walking around, thawed out, and looking good?
Hundreds.
Thousands.
Maybe. But not 450 years old. She's nearly twice as old as anyone on the planet.
250, 450. What's the difference? Doctor, 100 years ago when reanimation was more unpredictable, sure, maybe. But now it's old news.
Money.
Oh, no.
That guy's like having a stroke or something.
I would like ask Brian. I'd like to ask Brian Ibbett a question. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
250, 450. What's the difference?
200.
Such a stupid line.
It's that whole scene. My wife literally was sitting watching the movie with me. She got up and she said, "This is boring." And she left. She walked out.
Oh, yeah. That's when she gave up. That was actually a pretty good point to give up. That was a weird, dumb thing. But
she
again,
says, "Wait a minute! I remember this exact scene from Aliens with Paul Reiser waking up Sigourney Weaver." Okay, bye.
Yeah, exactly. That's again my point, man. They just point for point stole stuff. Jerks. I'm surprised they didn't have a face hugger of some kind. Oh, they did. I'm
they
sorry.
Did.
The hockey mask was a damn face hugger.
Yes, it was. She was trying to cut it off of him when they were first looking at it. Man, that was a good grotesque scene with her cutting on his face and his black blood is dripping down.
Yeah. It impressed me how she could sense his finger moving, but not him sitting up straight.
Right.
Not just standing up and walking over.
She was too busy looking into her really old Spock Kirk.
That's exactly. Did y'all not? I was picking that up. I actually enjoyed that. It was like, I felt like that was more of an homage than
it looked just like that old thing he used to stare into and go, totally "Captain, it seems we've found a blah, blah, blah." You're like, "What are you even looking at? What is that? Freaking kaleidoscope."
Yeah, it's like a microscope. But I like the fact that that's how they were lighting the character with that light from that. So I thought it looked really effective.
Yeah, it distracted her, though. She got killed. Yeah, she's dead.
Uh-huh. Don't look into your future Spock thingy.
Here's one called The Aliens Dialogue. I don't remember this. Well, anyway, here it is.
Yeah, don't leave those kids alone. What the hell's the matter with you?
We are less than an hour from Solaris. They have 7 fully equipped tactical units there that are more than capable of taking care of this. I say we wait and sedate.
I am taking this guy out.
Sergeant, I need him alive.
No, you want him alive, but what you need is to get out of my way.
Look, there are other considerations. Financial considerations.
My only consideration is the safety of the people on this ship.
So that's Paul Reiser and Hicks.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong movie again.
Yep.
You see what I mean, though? Like, it's just full on lifted.
He did everything but, you know, lock the Sigourney Weaver character in a room with a baby and a face hugger.
Pretty close to that. Somebody wasn't named Newt. That's the difference between the films.
Right.
Here's probably my, well, at least one of my favorite lines, because I just found it weird, non-sequitur-y weirdness. And it was the fat engineer working on his plants and had this to say about someone he thought was lurking around trying to scare him. Check it out.
Lou, I swear, you mess with an engineer, you're going to wake up in the morning with a waste hose in your bunk.
I want that on a t-shirt. A waste hose in your bunk. I just like it because it doesn't really, it's like future speak in a way. Like they're trying to make it sound like, oh yeah, future, he's an engineer, don't mess with him because there's something in the future called a waste hose.
Every day I wake up with a waste hose in my bunk.
Wakey, wakey, hands off, waste hose, snaky. Yeah. Bad bullet sounds. Brandy, I did this for you. This is specifically
for you.
Oh,
I know what you're going to play.
Yep, I thought of you when I heard it, because I know, you know, the weapon issue comes up all the time on the show, and we may as well talk about these. This is the sound of the guns, and I thought, man, Randy probably hates these, so here they are again for you to enjoy. Okay, that goes on for a while.
That sounded so much like a dance club. Seriously, it sounds like people are... If you just put a straight four beat under that, seriously, that is... That's why I don't like it, because it doesn't sound like guns.
Yep. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just sounds like a... I don't know what it sounds like. They're terrible. But are they bullets? I think they're bullets. So you have that going.
Whatever. I mean, there were good guns and bad guns in this film. The best being the two huge pistols that Sexbot ends up shooting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Those were amazing.
Yeah.
There were some really horrible guns. They're pulling out these huge Nerf Tonka truck silver things.
They're pretty bad. They're not as bad, although I'll say this. They're not as bad as First Contact's phaser rifles are terrible.
Yes, those are the worst.
Yeah.
There's never been a worse gun in a movie.
Yep.
At least not that was intended to look cool.
Right. I agree. Have you guys seen that recently? Those guns are terrible. They're ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
And no, isn't it Insurrection where they, the whole lock and load?
No, that's totally First Contact. And they're all like out, they're all down in the ship. The Borg are starting to come up the hall and they're adapting to them getting shot and getting shields now. And Picard keeps raising up this stupid plastic rifle.
Okay. All right. Yes. Yes, that's right. He's walking among the Borg. Watch Insurrection for the guns, because they film those things in broad daylight, and it's even worse.
Terrible. You just gave me an idea. I'm gonna do an illustration called Among the Borg, and it's just gonna be a happy smiley guy walking around with a bunch of Borg standing around.
And they don't do anything because you're not a threat.
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna do that. That's why the guy's smiling. All right, but let's see here. It's safe here, so shut up. Check it out.
We're gonna be safe here.
All right. What I like about that is I now have this to play.
Shut up!
Anytime I want.
And you should.
And I should. And will. Hey, remember the Microsoft conflict? Oh, man. Oh, that was good.
Horrible.
Oh, God.
Yes. So I captured that, and it's a stupid reference in here. Oh, but remember, though, it's 2001. You know, Microsoft is...
a different Earth now. Right?
Right. Well, yeah, but it's presumably the Microsoft conflict happened. 22. Oh, I don't know. This is so dumb.
Right around the time Windows Vista came out.
You can point to when it started. No, ME. It was like ME, Millennium Edition.
That's right.
Bob, the engineer, remembered it. And so.
Yeah. And he said
the whole thing was kicked off by Clippy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you sure you want to start a conflict? Click here.
Yes, I do. Clippy, you bastard.
Would you like some help?
So here it is, the Microsoft conflict as told by Fat Engineer. Check it out.
Hey, lucky you weren't alive during the Microsoft conflict. Hell, we were beating each other with our own severed limbs.
What?
Why? What does that have to do with software?
Nothing. It has everything to do with pop cultural reference.
Yeah,
poorly constructed to sound futury dumb.
Okay, all right. So
I hated it. Like, that's what I'm saying. There's clever jokes in this movie. That was not one of them.
Yep.
All right. So my understanding, if you just say, hey, have you heard about the Microsoft conflict? You're kind of talking about the long-standing conflict between Bill Gates and Paul Allen, right?
I guess.
So maybe that's it. Maybe they in the future. Paul Allen finally beats cancer, and Bill Gates becomes a cyborg.
Mm. No, the ants bring them both back. The ants, man. It's the ants.
I don't know, but I like that idea. Let's talk about, the worst acting moment, I thought, anyway. 9-second clip here of some bad, bad acting.
I've got trouble. The collision must have compromised the hull. She's bleeding out.
Oh no!
Oh no!
This moaning is being delivered by the person who doesn't know anything about spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because she's from the past.
Yeah.
But oh no! Wait, is that bad? No!
That's cited Geordi LaForge character was really working it. By the way, that reminds me of this thing about Nike playing in the morning.
Where did I park my car? Oh, no.
It's like that. I love that.
Oh, no.
All right. Then finally, both Randy, an aficionado of movie soundtracks, and Ibbot, who is a music nerd all around, I captured out the reason why I'm giving a huge, big, fat, bleeding F to the soundtrack of this movie.
Oh yeah, I want to hear your example, but I have more to say.
All right, well, here's the example of how it sounds. If you put enough Casio keyboards together, you can get what maybe sounds a little bit like a lot of Casio keyboards.
It sounded like a Super Nintendo Castlevania.
Yes. My gosh, that nails it. That's exactly it. 16-bit Castlevania game. Oh my gosh, that is so dead on. I couldn't put my finger on it, but that is exactly right. So am I wrong to call it bad? Because I thought it was terrible.
I don't think it was terrible. I don't think it was good. I think it could have been a lot better. There were times, though, when I actually noted it was sounding, I was enjoying the score. And then there were times like that when I was going, what the hell?
Yeah, I'm giving it retrograde style music score here. I thought it was bad.
Wow.
But anyone like it, or am I up in the night here?
No, you're right on the money.
Yeah. I was kind of like Randy. It wasn't the worst I've heard.
Mm.
If I'm distracted in a movie by the score, by the keyboardy Casio sounding soundtrack, then it's a bad soundtrack. That's a red flag right there.
Then it happened every time he'd walk down a hall, all slow and lumbery, and it would go beat 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 beat, and I'd just go, come on.
Yes. The thing I had to keep reminding myself was that film was made in this century. It was, sometimes it seems like a film that's 10 years older than it really is.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. It had like 4 release dates. It kept getting changed. Did eventually hit theaters, but it was a weird deal. I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's not good. This doesn't bode well. It kind of didn't bode well. Didn't make a lot of money.
No, in fact, if everyone who listens to Film Sack will go buy this film on Amazon, you will double its worldwide gross box office.
Let's put our heads together and make this happen, folks.
We're getting a big royalty check all of a sudden.
Right? What the hell?
Yeah. On that note, let's give it some awards. We got some awards to give out to this, I think, great bad movie. About that. Let's give it a Star Trek connection goes to Lisa Ryder, and she was in an Andromeda, a Roddenberry joint. That's as close as I could get. Well, both girls were, but...
Yeah, well, the Star Trek moves, they were all throwing down constantly when the ship was getting hit.
Yeah, that's true. And they had a fat engineer, but that was about it.
Yeah, they did. Nobody could do anything faster than 45 minutes. Everybody always needed it in 30 and couldn't be done for 45.
Now, I know we already talked about this, but best death, I put down Frozen Face Lady. Mm. For me, anyway. Best bad effect was the nanobots creeping up on everything. I thought that was horrible, but kind of cool at the same time.
Best effect, though?
What is best best?
Was that shuttle getting blown up as it was trying to detach from the ship. I thought that was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, with a girl who panicked and pulled out too soon. Wait a minute, what are we talking about? Okay.
She didn't detach.
No. She was like a dog. Man, I got a story to tell you about that one day. Anyway, we did that one. Dude, what may as well have been Paul Reiser, Jonathan Potts, who played Professor Lowe. Best use of David Cronenberg Award, him as the doctor, I believe.
Best use of as an award, that's going to be a hard one to give out.
It's hard to defend films as well, because he probably should have made this movie. It would have been better. Best He-Man doll impersonation, post nanobot Uber Jason form.
His new costume too, and his new hockey mask. So the ant said, "Well, let's instead of rebuilding him the way he was, let's go ahead and fix up his armor a little bit."
Mm-hmm. They're nanobots.
Nanobots are so unpredictable.
Yeah.
Good ants.
Soundtrack grade, freaking horrible. I give it an F.
For
freaking horrible. I thought it was terrible.
I just don't think it's that bad. Like, it was bad, but it wasn't.
All right. Not as bad as I say, maybe. Maybe I was in the wrong mood for that crap, but it was bad. And that's it for our awards this week. Let's move on to our Twitter post in 140 characters or less. Let's sum this film up. We'll start with Randy. Randy, what do you have?
Jason X, also known as Jason in Space, also known as a bunch of Canadian hotties run around a spaceship in skimpy outfits with their boobs out. It's a 10 out of 10. Get it?
I do. The X is for 10.
Okay.
I get it. Brian Dunaway, what do you got?
Jason X. Jason brings Horny to the future.
Kill, 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 kill. Ma, 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 ma. Kill.
What's that?
What are you doing? I don't know where you're going.
Also, I need one of those chainmail hospital gowns. Those things are sweet.
Oh, those are pretty sweet. Yeah,
dude, yeah. I loved that. That's Samantha. Even Samantha comes walking in, and she just glances at the screen and goes, "Whoa, what's that?
Yeah. And where do I get one?
Yeah, how do I get my hands on one of them there? And Ibbot, please take it home. What do you got?
Sure, Jason X. I could have written a better movie in my cryogenic sleep.
Ah, very good.
And that sounded like a Twitter post. That was pretty good. Nice job. Well, here's what I learned while you were putting magnetic nipples on your robot lady friend. In the future, losing an arm is no big deal. In that self same future, video phones don't have to be answered. They just start rolling. Just wake that poor old guy up.
Yeah, wait. He come rolling out of his little cabinet he was in.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a drawer.
Yeah.
He woke me up in my drawer.
Starting today and from now on, salad tongs make my nipples hurt.
I just don't know why, but when she showed up in the door and she's holding a huge bottle of champagne and some tongs, I was actually thinking, oh, they're gonna have fondue. I was thinking like she'd showed up for food.
That's,
you know,
right. Really, I thought it was eating lobster. That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
yeah, like
she's got
food.
The lobster crackers.
Yeah. Let's eat.
Also, hey, James Cameron called. He wants his Alien screenplay back. Ninja Data Bishop Lady is stupid, but kind of awesome. That fight was great.
That was pretty freaking.
I didn't
cool.
like how she changed her personality, but whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she was very inconsistent, but you could just say he programmed her to be very inconsistent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the final thing I learned is he's done with the campers, and that's what I learned while you were all putting nipples on stuff. Let's move on to an email from a listener. Dear Film Sack, says Andrew Littleton of Indiana. You know, Indiana's own Andrew Littleton.
That one.
The other week I was in a meager. I don't know what he means by that. A meager. It must be a store.
Maybe he was in a merger.
Well, it says that. It's M-I-
oh,
M-I-E.
Oh, J. M-I-M-E-I-J-E-R, right?
Yeah, what is that?
It's like a Best Buy, and it's a regional central, North Central, maybe Chicago. Oh,
okay, that makes sense. Maybe I guess Indiana now has them.
Your weird store names confuse us.
Right? Okay, so I was in Piggly Wiggly,
Flash Gordon. The other week, I was in a meager or whatever, getting a few things when I noticed a Redbox. You know, the video rental joint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I thought I shall rent a movie, so I began. I shall rent a movie. So I began. He says, I began scrolling through the movie selection and I came upon Johnny Mnemonic. Needless to say, I recognized the title from FilmSack and said to myself, oh, I should get this. There must have been an angel named FilmSack watching over me. When I was about to press rent on the screen, I had a voice scream into my head saying, for the love that is all good and holy, don't do it, man. So I didn't. So I'm writing you guys to say thank you for saving me 90 minutes of pure horror. You saved my life. Take care, Andrew Littleton.
You should have rented it.
Yeah,
that's,
I think
too bad.
No, he really
don't
shouldn't.
Don't spend real money on it.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
99 cents is the real money.
Yeah, if you already have a subscription and you're watching Netflix anyway, sure. But don't pay me.
Yeah,
money.
That's our goal, is to get you to get more out of Netflix, not less out of Redbox.
Out of Redbox. Yeah. By the way, I got an email or Twitter over the week, somebody complaining that I keep reverting to calling small people in films midgets. So when I say, oh yeah, George Lucas hired a lot of midgets for that third, you know, whatever. And I just want to state here publicly on the show, I'm going to do my best, especially for my dwarven friends. I have a few that I will now try harder and harder to not refer to them as midgets. It's a long built-in terminology that I have a difficult time shaking.
Yeah,
I had a coworker who had, you know, lifelong sufferer of dwarfism, and we had a long talk about
lifelong
that.
Lifelong sufferer?
Yes, absolutely.
I guess
I mean,
that's
absolutely.
One way to look at it, but sure.
Don't you? And okay.
I'm just saying, she had quite a difficult, you know, life because of dwarfism.
Surgeries and all that stuff.
Yeah, and had this.
You're talking about the results of that. I thought you meant like, as opposed to someone who suddenly gets in their 20s and becomes a dwarf. So I was confused.
Oh, right. Got it.
It's not catching is the nice thing. But anyway, we had this whole conversation. I'm sorry to say, Scott, referring to them, you can use the word dwarfism, right? You can use, you could say someone, you know, was born a dwarf, but yeah. Saying they are dwarven, big no-no. Don't do that.
Oh,
really?
I just referred to them as my dwarven friends, didn't I?
Yeah, right. Don't do that one.
I cannot win for losing, as the old saying goes. So we'll do our best. But still, I think it stands that George Lucas hired a lot of midgets. That's all I was saying. That's my whole point.
Well, I think we're pointing out something that we feel like is a weird thing that we're looking at and going, okay, why are they exploiting these people who are shorter of stature for certain things? Oh man, this is terrible. You remember Mini-Me, right? From
Yeah.
Austin Powers.
I'm watching all these. I'm watching all these commercials on some local cash place. Where they're trying to get you to come in and get cash, and they keep using him trying to get money at an ATM, and going, "Are you short on cash?" I'm like, "Really?
Yeah,
really?"
And that's the thing, dude.
I mean, if that's terrible. I'm not laughing. That's terrible. That's horrible.
If you're Vern Troyer, you don't have much of an option but to make fun of yourself. If you're a wee man, Jason Acuna, or if you're even a great actor like Peter Dinklage is in a scene in Elf going, "Call me Elf one more time," right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they have much of a choice. So you kind of wonder if they really endorse that comedy, you know, or is it just the only work they can get?
Is Dinklage the one in Game of Thrones?
Dude, yes, he's amazing.
Great in that, yeah, fantastic in that.
Better than he was in Nip Tuck.
Yeah, yes, but I forgot that was the same guy. Interesting.
Yeah, and they keep throwing down jokes that he makes about how he's short of stature, but God blessed him where it counts.
Yeah,
there are jokes about he's going to go use his spear. I love that.
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of into that. That show impressed me. I'm excited for that to continue. But anyway, all the Peter Dinklages of the world. Good luck. Godspeed. Or as fast as you can go. I'm sorry. That's terrible. I'll take it all back.
It stinks that he's a great actor, but he's also a dwarf. And his name starts with Dink. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'm just saying it takes 8 of him to run Jabba the Hutt. That's all I'm saying. Jabba the Hutt needs 8 of Peter Dinklage to make it work. 3 in the tail, 2 up front. We were doing
so good.
Well, yes. You know, midget is up there with, you know, with retard and other words that I don't want to, you know, talk about where we don't really have a choice. We've got to just not use it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm working on it.
Honestly, I feel like in some ways, and I don't want to sound mean or anything. It may sound stupid, but I just don't want to feel disingenuous. I don't want to go. Sometimes it sounds forced when somebody says, well, you know, Jabba the Hutt is ran by 8 short people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It feels like I'm intentionally trying to avoid.
But here's the disingenuous part. The fact that they are cast in and accepting roles as small people in small roles where they're meant to be funny because they're small. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not in there because, oh, look at him. He is a thespian and rises above all of his stature issues. No, they're hiring him because Kenny Baker had a rock land on him and at the end of Time Bandits. Now he's okay. And that's funny because he's tiny. I mean, they're not doing it because they're great actors. They're doing it because they need little people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. To make Wizard of Oz, you needed a hell of a lot of little people.
Yeah. And children. Sure. But, but the point is, you know, why we didn't all go see Willow because we're really into Warwick Davis. We went to see Willow because it's about a tiny little dwarven guy.
Yeah. And let's name Deep Roy, and we've now named 6 people who have made a great career in acting.
But they
throw Billy Barty into the mix.
Yeah, Billy Barty. Great, great example. Utah connection.
And this is one of the. I've thought about this a lot this week between seeing that commercial and watching Freak last White Night last week, and trying to understand why I'm so irritated with freaks and stuff, like freak shows. I'm not irritated with the freaks. I'm irritated with the exploitation of the freaks. And I'm just never liked that. And
But you know what? You're summing it exactly up the way I'm trying to get to this. It's like,
but what are other options? Does someone who has physical disabilities, like you said, what options do they have as far as work goes?
It's like Vern Troyer coming up to me and going, look, stop making fun of me because I'm short. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to go be Mini-Me in a movie where it's all about me being short and everyone making fun of that. So just, we'll talk to you later. I guess I'm okay I don't know. I don't like the word midget either, but I'm just getting to.
Needs to be a morning stream segment.
It kind of does.
I'm here to tell you, I will use the word midget again. I might even use it again while I'm being recorded because it's useful. You know, there are times when there is something really funny to be said. I always think about the film Bad Santa. You know, like holy cow, that word is used a lot in that film, and it's funny.
Was that Dinklage in that too?
No. I remember the guy's name.
Same guy played Me, Myself, and Irene.
Black dude.
Oh, right. Oh, no. Yeah. He was black. Duh. Well, I'm thinking of the one in Seinfeld, and that's not Dinklage. That's that other guy.
No. I like that guy, too.
I like him, yeah. That's
I can't. Mm-hmm. I cannot say that there's any small person I've ever seen in any role that I just went, oh, what a, I can't stand him. I always love him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I always love the fact that they're usually super people who do the acting and stuff. They're usually super forward and they just do a really good job.
Yeah. You want to see the ultimate. I mean, watch Time Bandits again and realize how it's not just that they're lovable little people. They're really compelling characters played by good actors who know what they're doing. And that's enough for me. I'm fine with it. I'm okay that they're exploited a little bit. If they're bringing a smile to everyone's face, that sounds terrible.
So you're all right with midget toss.
You just patronized them so terribly.
I know. I realize that.
We're never going to win this contest because we keep going, midgets are great. Short people are great. Now they're kind of funny, too.
I went to high school with a midget.
As it was coming out of my mouth.
Some of my best friends are midgets.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't want to go down that road for sure. But so I'll just play this instead.
Shut up!
All right. It's time to end the show. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the show. Next week, we have Every Which Way But Loose. Emphasis on butt loose. Clyde. What?
Right Turn, Clyde.
yet another really famous film I've never seen.
A Clint Eastwood film I've seen but don't remember at all. Have seen, some of us don't remember, some of us may remember fondly. I don't know, but it's another Clint Eastwood. So our second, will it be? Yeah. Dirty Harry.
Oh, right.
Remember with the...
Yeah,
that guy. And the monkey. It's got a monkey in it.
Awesome. And
not since Planet of the Apes have we had an orangutan on
the
film.
They prefer to be called hairy small people.
Awesome. They prefer to be called Zaius, if you really want to get down to it. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that, very much so. That'll be next week for FilmSack. In the meantime, visit the site, filmsack.com. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/FilmSack. You can always leave us reviews on iTunes. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/FilmSack. Details coming soon on this contest to pick the movie for Nerdtacular. We're a little behind on getting that done, but there are many other things going on. But that's coming soon as well. So stay tuned for that. I think that's it. That's going to do it for this episode. For me, for Brian, and for Randy, stay tight, stay frosty. We'll see you next week.
I forgot my arm, dumbass.
Yep. Not at all.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.